I am never late. You guys know that. Now she's fingering the chalk, pacing the room. There's sweat on her face. She leans herself against the desk and rubs her chin like she's trying to find lost words. Well, let's get started, she says, not even seeing what we all see up there on the blackboard. Who can tell me what Shakespeare meant when he... She begins, finally getting a good look at our faces. Everybody is quiet. Who read the 30 pages I assigned last night? Miss Saunders asks. Most of the hands go up, including mine, even though I didn't read none of it. Then let's get to work, she says, heading for the blackboard. When Miss Saunders sees what somebody's drawn, she stops in her tracks, like she's been hit in the stomach. There's a woman's face up there on the blackboard. The left side is smooth and pretty. The right side is cracked and drooping like melting wax. It's done in pink, brown, and blue. It's a mess, that's all I can say. The teacher with two faces. Wiggly words spell it out in blue chalk. Miss Saunders' big hands erase the board with four quick swipes, like a windshield wiper on full speed. Who can sum up yesterday's reading for me? John McIntyre? She says his name real weird, like maybe she ain't just asking him about schoolwork, but accusing him of drawing the picture. We all stare at John John. I know he didn't draw the picture. He came into class after me. Miss Saunders carries on with her lesson. Tell me about today's reading assignment. What would you do if you were Romeo and you loved a girl you couldn't have?
Dump her,
John John says, staring right at me. Why sweat it? There's plenty of girls out there. Everybody laughs. John John, you would not, Carrie Miller says. If you ever got a girl to like you, and we all know that ain't never gonna happen, you'd sell your skin to keep her. Miss Saunders slaps her hands together to get off the chalk and asks Carrie to hold her thought. Next thing you know, Miss Saunders is sitting on the corner of Carrie's desk, crossing her legs. Let John tell his story his way. But John, remember, this is the love of your life. Her folks are trying to keep you apart because you're not good enough, so they say. Nobody wants to talk about this stuff, I say, half under my breath. Miss Saunders starts walking the classroom aisles. What do you want to talk about? She asks us. Why Malika so black? John John says. Miss Saunders' eyes shoot his way. Her smile is gone and her arms are folded tight. Sorry, John John says, shrugging and folding his arms too. Out of my room, John John. Miss Saunders points to the door. But nothing, she says. Man, I'm thinking, why can't she just let it go? Forget about it. Don't she see dragging it out only makes it worse? Next thing I know, John John's faking an apology to me, mumbling that he's sorry. Okay, everybody, let's get this thing back on track, Miss Saunders says. Romeo and Juliet, give me your thoughts, she says, unbuttoning her suit jacket. Romeo and Juliet didn't play by the rules. People had expectations for them, wanted them to act and be a certain way, but they refused.
Yeah, and they died anyhow,
Worm shouts from the back.
So what's your point?
You tell me. Anybody here believes strongly enough to die for something or someone?
My homies, Eric yells. I'd give up blood for one of my boys.
My mama, shouts Desda.
Nobody, says Jeremy. Ain't doing no dying for nobody but me.
It's cold but true,
don't love nobody as much as my own fine black self, he says, kissing his arm from shoulder to fingertip. Now everybody's cracking up, including Miss Saunders.
Yeah, Jeremy loves himself. Some Jeremy, Raina says.
Jeremy starts rubbing his cheeks.
You gotta love yourself, baby. If you don't, who will?
Romeo loved Juliet. My father loves my mother. People love other people, Desda says.
But when they're gone, who's gonna love you? When Romeo died, Juliet killed her stupid self. She loved him more than her own self. Now, do that make sense?
Jeremy says. Miss Saunders is on the other side of the room now. She's standing right next to Jeremy.
You're saying we shouldn't love people so much?
No. I'm saying if you love yourself more than you love me, you will take good care of you. And you won't try to do me in because that's just gonna cause problems for you.
People who love who they are ain't gonna make unnecessary trouble for themselves, get it?
Go ahead, Mr. Philosopher, preach,
John John says, slapping him 5. Can we get back to Romeo and Juliet? I say, just to shut him up. But John John interrupts again.
You probably didn't even read the book.
Why are you always on Malika's case, John John?
Jeremy asks.
Shut up, John John says.
Make me, Jeremy says, getting out of his seat.
I'm smiling big time. John John is getting a taste of some of his own stuff. I like that.
The period is almost over and you two ding-dongs are wasting time,
Worm says. Everybody looks at Worm like he's crazy. Since when did he care about stuff like Romeo and Juliet?
Be quiet and let somebody else talk,
Carrie says.
I wish somebody would kill themselves over me, Desda says.
I'd kill myself if I had to kiss those crusty lips,
John John butts in.
I mean, ain't that the most romantic thing in the world? Somebody who can't live without you.
Desda goes on, ignoring John John.
No, I say before I think about it.
It ain't. I start chewing on my lip, trying to figure my way out of this. But everybody's looking. I keep on talking. When my daddy died 3 years ago, Mama fell apart. She couldn't eat. She couldn't sleep. She stayed up all night long, washing and scrubbing till her hands was raw, I say, chewing on my finger. The class gets so quiet, it's scary. I was 10 years old and brushing her teeth, feeding her oatmeal like a baby. She cried all the time. Last year, she finally came to. Got up one day, went and bought a sewing machine and started making clothes. Ain't never sewed nothing before. Just started, day and night, sewing. Some kids at the back of the room start to snicker and make smart remarks. Shut up, I'm thinking. Just shut up. The more she sewed them clothes, the better she got. She started picking up after herself. Got a job and all. No, ain't nothing good come from loving somebody so much you can't live without 'em, I say. No good at all. Marla asks me why nobody in our family came to help me and Mama out when my daddy died. I say that we don't have no relatives, but that ain't the truth. Mama's got a sister in New York. Daddy had brothers all over the place, but they weren't close. And getting in touch with them would have meant taking me away or putting Mama in some institution someplace. I wasn't having that, so we lived off Daddy's Social Security and savings. The classroom gets quiet again. Then the bell rings, busting up the silence like a fist through glass. Chapter 14.
A few days later, I'm hanging out with Char and the twins. Char told me I better show up if I know what's good for me. She says she don't like how I'm acting lately, forgetting to do her homework, giving her too much lip. She's right. I'm pushing my luck with her. But maybe I can learn to hang with Char and get along with her, too. Fighting her ain't no use. Look where it got me the last time in the lunchroom. I'm tired of working in the school office. It's been a few weeks now, and I'm still bored stiff. I want to have some fun. So after fifth period, instead of going to the office to work, I head to the lockers with Char, Raina, and Raisa. And who do we run into but Miss Saunders, who's on hall duty? The first thing Miss Saunders does is ask me how work is coming in the office. Then she says, "I guess you're headed there now. You are working there today, right?" Char stays cool for once, and she and the twins start walking ahead of Miss Saunders and me. "I'm on my way," I say, turning back around and walking up the hall toward the office. I hear Miss Saunders tell Char and the twins they better hurry up to class or they will have to get a late note to get in. Char says something smart and keeps stepping. A moment later, I hear the school side exit door closing. Miss Saunders walks me to the office like I'm some baby. She's dressed to the nines, like usual. She's got on gold hoop earrings with dolphins jumping through them, and she's making small talk, asking how I am, asking if I read her latest assignment. "That a designer suit you wearing?" I ask, knowing full well it is. Miss Saunders fingers the collar. "I think so." "You think so? Don't you know?" "Yes, it is, Malika," she says, kind of smart. "Real teachers can't afford designer suits," I say, before I really think about what I'm saying. "I wore suits for my job at the ad agency. Suits are kind of like a uniform, I guess." "My mom wears a uniform to work. What you got on ain't no uniform." Miss Saunders nods. "I think if I was wearing my own clothes, I would feel like 2 cents next to her. But I'm in Char stuff, so I'm holding my own." "What are you doing here, Miss Saunders? At McClinton, I mean," I ask. While we walk, Miss Saunders stops every once in a while and picks up a gum wrapper or a soda can tab. "I want to teach," she says, plain as day.
"Then how come you're not at that Catholic school 10 blocks from here? Or one of them private schools downtown?"
Miss Saunders doesn't say nothing. She's just walking slow, like I got all day.
"I mean, teachers don't come here 'cause they want to. They get dumped here 'cause they goofed up someplace else, usually. Except Ty, maybe. But you know she's weird. She wanted to come to McClinton," I tell her. Then Miss Saunders gives me a trick question that I ain't expecting.
"Why are you here?"
"What?" I fold my arms tight in front of me.
"Why are you here?" she asks again.
"I checked your records. Last year you passed the test for Central Middle School across town."
"You check my records?"
"I check all my students' records. In business, you always learn about your clients, who they are, what makes them tick. It helps you do your job better. It's the same with teaching. Know your clients."
It bothers me that Miss Saunders knows all my business.
"You know about us kids, but we don't know nothing about you. Except where you came from before you got here, that you like suits and jewelry, and that you was born with that face."
Miss Saunders says there's nothing much to know about her. She's single. She doesn't have any kids. She was working 18-hour days and traveling the country all the time.
When she turned 40, she didn't want to do it anymore. 6 months later, she found out about the school board's new plan for letting executives teach in the schools.
"You gave that up to come here?"
I asked, reaching down and picking up a broken pen.
"The business world can be very competitive," Miss Saunders says.
"I was always trying to outthink, outperform, even outdress my competitors. It was wearing me down."
"Well, you're the best-dressed one in this place," I say.
Miss Saunders reaches for the top button on her suit.
"You think you ever going back, Miss Saunders?"
"Back to working in a big company," I ask. Miss Saunders shakes her head.
"No, I think teaching is it for me."
"You won't miss the money and stuff like that?"
She shakes her head a second time.
We turn the corner and I go into the office. Miss Saunders walks in, throws trash in the garbage can by the door, and keeps on going.
It's the first time me and her have been together without things falling apart.
Chapter 15. Miss Saunders has really got all the other teachers stirred up, except for Ty. Most of them don't like her. They say Mr. Pajoli's sucking up to her so that maybe her company will donate lots of money to the school. Maybe even get us some computers and a new library. All of this makes the other teachers resent Miss Saunders even more. In the office, the teachers never say her name. They just say, "She did this and she did that."
"I hate pushy people,"
Miss Benson, the English teacher, is saying when she comes into the office with Mr. Pajoli.
"Every day she's coming to me with some new idea she came up with, questioning why things can't be done differently."
Mr. Pajoli tries to quiet Miss Benson down, but she just gets louder and her face grows red. Raising her finger to him, she says,
"You get her in line, Charles. She's disrupting everything. Everything."
Mr. Pajoli's nodding while his eyes go over the messages Miss Carroll hands him.
"That's the third parent calling to complain this week. Too much homework, too much reading," Miss Carroll says.
A big smile comes over Miss Benson's face.
"Don't tell me. Let me guess who they're complaining about."
Mr. Pajoli scratches his bald head. He lets out a deep breath and says he'll take care of things. Then the phone rings.
"Yes, he's here."
Miss Carroll presses down the hold button and smiles.
"Someone else calling about your favorite person."
Mr. Pajoli clicks his false teeth together.
"Send it back to my office," he tells Miss Carroll.
Miss Benson touches up the edges of her lipstick with her finger and walks off humming. Miss Carroll tells me to get back to work and stop being so nosy. I go and staple papers together over in the corner. It's good to see teachers get in as much trouble as kids do sometimes. The office is a busy place. Folks come and go like this is a bus stop on the corner. As soon as I get a few papers stapled, here comes someone else wanting something. This time it's Desda.
"Hey, Malika. I need me a note to get into class. I've been to the dentist," she says, pulling out a balled-up piece of paper with some writing on it.
I look in Miss Carroll's direction. She's headed over to give Desda what she needs. While she's doing that, here comes Charlize. I don't see the twins nowhere.
"Charlize, shouldn't you be in class?"
Miss Carroll asks, still tending to Desda.
"In a minute,"
Char snaps, waving for me to come to the other end of the counter. Miss Carroll's voice is squeaky and high-pitched, like a wheel that needs some oil.
"Charlize Jones! I don't know what you think is going on here, but Malika is doing a job for the principal, and you, young lady, had better hightail it to class."
Char just laughs at Miss Carroll.
"You act like Malika is working for the President of the United States. Man!"
Miss Carol shoves the note over to Desda. All right now, get to class. Desda's looking at me like I did something wrong. Charlize takes out a stick of gum and pushes it in her mouth real slow. Miss Carol looks like she's going to go off on her. Then out comes Mr. Pajoli.
Hello, Mr. P,
Cha says in a sweet baby voice.
You think maybe one day I can work in here too? Maybe answer the phone or something.
Cha stands there in her skin-tight striped pantsuit with her finger in her mouth like a 2-year-old. Mr. Pajoli knows Cha ain't the least bit like that for real.
Sure, Charlize. You may start working in the office as soon as you pay the fines for the 3 library books and 2 math books you lost last year.
Cha starts arguing with Mr. Pajoli about how she ain't never had those things and how everybody is out to get her.
Anyhow, she says, I ain't no slave. If I work for somebody, there's got to be some dollars involved.
Mr. Pajoli tells Char to move along to get to class.
For what? She says, heading out. All these teachers is boring me to death.
Mr. Pajoli asks her what class she has now.
Math with Ty, Char says.
Nobody can be bored in her class unless they want to be, Mr. Pajoli says, walking out with her.
Mr. Pajoli is right, too. Ty is funny. She meditates a lot, so during her class break, it ain't unusual to see her sitting on the desk with her legs folded and her arms crossed. She's different, but she can teach. I used to get all A's in Ty's class last year. Since I got this office gig, Ty's been bugging me about keeping up my average. She came right in here yesterday and asked me where my homework was. Mr. Pajoli was standing right at the desk, too. I lied and said it was in my locker. Ty asked Mr. Pajoli if it was okay for me to go get it. Then I had to fess up and tell her I forgot to do it. She asked Mr. Pajoli if it's okay for me to use my office time to do my math homework. He said yeah, but that I'd have to make up the time later. Teachers don't do nothing but cause you grief. I swear that's all they do.
Chapter 16.
You getting soft, Malika, I say to myself. It's Saturday morning, and I've been up 2 hours already writing this stuff for Miss Saunders. If Char or the twins knew about this, they would think I was out of my mind, doing schoolwork on the weekend, for fun. Mama's trying to work me to death today, too. She got me washing windows and clothes and everything else. I tell her I have to do homework. That's the only thing that got me off the hook for now. So here I am, trying to think something up before I head to Char's. It's coming slow, but it's coming.
Dear Diary, the sea is wild and mean. Water is crushing against the boat like 100 angry lions. My body is wet with sweat and throw up from the others pressing close around me like sticks of firewood. They chain us together like thieves and beat us till we bleed. I have made up my mind, though. I will show no weakness. I will be strong, strong like the sea and the wind. Akilma.
I finish writing, throw the paper in my drawer, and run out of the house. Mama don't know I'm headed for Char's place. She wouldn't like it. She says Char's sister Juju lets Char do anything she wants, lets her run wild. Mama's right about that. Just before I'm about to leave, Sweets calls. She asks why I'm going to Char's if I'm trying to shake Char loose. I'm bored, I tell her. I don't want to go to the avenue or hang out here at home. Besides, Char asked me to come over. Her sister's got some new things. I was going to say no. Then she mentioned something about a black and gold skirt set.
I can hear Sweets listening on the other end of the phone. She doesn't say much before she hangs up.
I thought I would be at Char's by 1 o'clock. But Mama keeps finding things for me to do. I have to clean out the cabinets, sweep, and take clothes to wash at the laundromat. I swear, Mama thinks I'm her slave. She don't even want to pay me a little something for doing so many chores. She says it's my house, too, and that I should be glad to help. When 4 o'clock comes, I'm knocking on Char's door. Can't nobody hear me, though. The music's too loud. Some African stuff is playing. Drums are beating. Singers are making animal noises. Maracas are shaking. I push open the broken screen door and go inside. Juju is jamming. Her and about 10 other people are dancing. They're rubbed up on one another. When I'm halfway across the room, a man with dreadlocks down to his belt jumps in front of me and says, "Come jam with us, little sister." Then he starts moving like he's a snake. I shake my head and run up the steps. Juju tells the dreadlock brother to turn up the music and leave me alone. The music gets louder, and so do the pots and sticks people are banging on. I'm thinking that the party's just got started. But Char says it's finishing up from last night. I ask her how she sleeps through all the noise. She says she ain't been to sleep yet. That she gets paid big bucks from Juju to keep glasses clean, ashtrays emptied, and food coming. "I don't mind missing sleep for $100, she says, waving the money in my face. Juju parties all the time, 2-3 times a month. People come from all over to go to her parties. Char and I find a place to talk upstairs in one of the empty bedrooms. I tell Char I couldn't stand being around so many strangers all the time. Char says I'm a wimp, that it ain't nothing for her to wake up and find somebody she ain't never seen using her bathroom 2 days after the party's done. Folks like being around, Juju, she says. Don't they work? I ask. Some do, some don't, she says matter-of-factly. Juju don't care as long as they pay to get into the party. She ain't giving nobody nothing for free. I shake my head. I'm thinking, ain't no way I could live like this. Cigarette smoke burning your eyes. The house smelling like old chicken grease. Strangers passed out on your living room floor. None of it bothers Char. As long as she's looking fine, she's all right. But today, she don't look so hot. She's got dark circles under her eyes and her hair is all over her head. You look like you've been sleeping already, I say, picking lint out of her hair. She pushes my hand away. I caught me a few winks about an hour ago. Juju didn't even miss me. If she did, I would be in real trouble. She says she don't pay me to sleep. Then Char lets out a giant yawn. She lays herself across the bed. I want to tell her I didn't come here to watch her sleep, but I feel sorry for her. So I just sit in the chair, watching her nod off. But before Charlize can get to sleep good, Juju yells at the top of her lungs, "Charlize! What am I paying you for, girl? Get yourself down here, now!" Charlize jumps up and runs down the stairs. Juju's yelling and screaming at her in front of everybody. I keep asking myself, why is Char taking that from her? Then I remember that Char hasn't got nobody but Juju. Juju is only 25. I sit upstairs by myself for a long while, too scared to go downstairs. Finally, I tell myself to get on out of there. When I do get the courage to go downstairs, it's still a madhouse. Char's running around.
people are lined up at the door trying to get in the house. Strangers are asking me where the bathroom is and how come there ain't no toilet paper. I don't tell Char I'm going. I just walk out the door. Last I seen, Char was rubbing her eyes and handing out drinks. Juju was shaking her hips and smoking a cigarette, yelling for somebody to turn up the music. Chapter 17. As soon as I get to the street, two boys I ain't never seen before start hassling me. "Hey, Beanpole," one of them says. "You mean Black Bean," his friend says. Across the street, some ladies yell, "Y'all leave that girl be." That just makes those boys tease me more. But I ignore them and keep on walking. Soon I'm halfway home. I'm getting hot, so I take my jacket off and sit myself down on some steps to cool off. Most of the houses on the block are vacant. I'm sitting on the curb, imagining what this street would look like if people picked up the trash and gutted some of the buildings. Then, when I look down the street, here comes the two boys who were bothering me. I get up and start walking as fast as I can. I keep putting my finger in my mouth and scraping off nail polish. I cross the street even when I don't have to. They keep coming. "I like a girl with long legs," one of them says, catching up to me. "A sweet, chocolate brown baby with long legs." One of the boys is wearing biker pants. He laughs and starts walking faster. I walk fast, too. "Baby, baby, baby," he says. "You my kind of woman." Then he gets in front of me. His friend gets behind me. He's dressed in big, drooping pants that show his underwear. "Give me a little kiss," he says, "right here on my soft, juicy lips." His friend twists my hand behind my back. I yell for him to let me go, but he doesn't. He's big. He's got muscles in his neck and everywhere else. "Give my friend a little kiss," he says, pushing me toward the other kid. I tell them to leave me alone. I tell them my dad's a cop and he will lock them up. They don't care. They are having fun. The boy with the biker pants says that if I just give him a kiss, he'll leave me be. "I want to see what you taste like," is all. "No," I yell, but nobody can hear me. Ain't nothing alive on this block except mangy cats and stray dogs, and they look like they want to jack me up, too. My heart is beating so fast I can't breathe. "I ain't playing," I say, trying to pull loose from the big one with the droopy pants. "You pretty black thing," the biker pants kid says. "I ain't gonna hurt you." Then he closes in on me. Tears come running down my face. My head is shaking. "No." His friend is laughing. Laughing and shoving me closer. I want to scratch his eyes out. Only I can't get my hand loose. Next thing I know, the biker pants guy is standing over me, his breath smelling like green peppers and garlic. I'm crying, thinking what to tell Mama. She will be mad at me for walking down a street where nobody lives. I kick the guy who's holding me. He looks like he wants to scream. He lets up on one of my hands for a second while he's yelling for the other kid to hurry up. I dig my fingernails into that other boy's stomach and hang on tight like a crab. He hits me so hard a knot starts to swell on my arm. Then he puts his hand over my mouth. My heart's about to beat me up inside. I open my mouth, grab hold of his hand with my teeth like a mad dog, and don't let go. He's trying to pull his fingers free, but he can't. He's screaming for me to let him go.
but I hang on. He's punching me upside the head, screaming and punching, till finally I set him free. "You black thing," he says, putting up his big fist like he wants to slam me again. My big teeth marks have left a dent in his hand. He starts loosening his belt with his good hand.
"Forget it, man," the other one says. "She ain't worth it."
He shoves me hard. "Next time we see you, you better run," he says. I don't give those evil kids no second chances. I run like the wind. I run and run and run till I can't breathe no more. When I'm almost home, I sit down on some steps near my house and cry. My whole body is shaking and seems like it won't ever stop. Tears and snot are running down my face. "No more back streets, fool," I tell myself. When I'm just about home, I run into Sweets. She's headed to the corner store to buy her dad some snuff. I tell her what happened.
"Please don't tell Mama," I beg.
Sweets agrees. She gives me a sorry look. I know she knows all this happened because I had to be around Char. But she says she'll keep it quiet anyhow. She gives me a used tissue to wipe my face clean. I don't have no choice but to take the tissue. I can't let Mama see me like this. By the time I get home, I don't look so bad. I tell Mama that some boys was picking on me, but I don't go into no real detail. Mama studies me for a long minute. "You better be careful out there," she says, setting a plate of pinto beans, rice, and pork chops down on the table. I rub my sore arm and try to scoop some beans and rice into my mouth, but my throat won't swallow them down without a struggle. "I ain't that hungry," I say, leaving the table before Mama can say anything. I go to my room and cry myself to sleep.
Chapter 18. It's been a month now, and all I think about is that thing with those boys. Mama's been saying I got my head in the clouds. She keeps asking if I'm in love or something. I spend a lot of time in my room and don't even talk on the phone, not even to Sweets. Mostly, I'm thinking and writing in my diary. Our diary, Akilma's and mine. Lately, it's hard to know where Akilma's thoughts begin and mine end. I mean, I might be starting off with her talking about how scared she is with the smallpox spreading around the ship and killing people. Then I end up the same paragraph with Akilma saying she's scared that maybe people will always think she's ugly. But I'm really talking about myself. I'm scared people will always think I'm ugly. Miss Saunders says it's good that I'm getting so close to Akilma.
Good writers get close to their characters,
Miss Saunders says. I've even written in our diary about that thing with the boys. Only it ain't me the stuff is happening to. It's Akilma. She's there on the boat, up on deck when the men running the ship come after her.
Dear diary, where do you run when there's no place to run?
They had me trapped.
I could see no way out. Then I scratched one on the face, beat the other on his fat, dirty hands. And when I was running to hide deep in the crowd up there, I saw someone I knew. It was Kinchari. Kinchari is not dead.
Akilma. I showed this last part to Miss Saunders. She said this is powerful stuff.
Writing is clearly one of your gifts, Malika, she said.
I know it sounds stupid, but when I was leaving Miss Saunders' classroom, I hugged them papers to my chest like they was some boy I've been wanting to press up against for weeks.
It feels good doing something not everybody can do.
Mama got a saying. Don't go getting full of yourself, 'cause soon as you do, somebody's gonna come and let the wind out of your sails.
Today that somebody is Char. She sees me walking down the hall like I'm wearing clouds for shoes.
Why you look all stupid?
She asks, plucking me upside the head. Like a dummy, I tell her about Miss Saunders and my work. Soon as the words are out, I wanted to kick myself. I said I wasn't telling nobody about this. Now look what I did.
You Miss Saunders' pet anyhow,
Char says, sticking gum in her mouth.
She got you that job in the office just to keep you away from me, I bet.
I start to tell Char that ain't so, but she don't want to listen.
We're hanging out in the bathroom next period. You coming?
She asks.
I have to work, I say.
That's what good little slaves do, obey their masters, right?
If Char knew, really knew what girls like Akima went through, she wouldn't be talking down slaves.
You gonna be a slave or your own master?
Char asks, crossing her arms. If I was my own master, I will never speak to you again, I want to say. But instead, I just tell Char I'll see her later.
You better be there,
she says, walking off. She's halfway down the hall when I hear Worm call her name and see him run to catch up with her. Worm is sliding his arm around Char's shoulder. She yanks it off like he's got body odor. Now that Char has finally stole Worm away from Daphne, she don't even want him no more. That's how she is. Sometimey. It ain't no real choice when you think about it. Hanging with Char and them in the bathroom is more fun than stapling papers in the school office. So when I push open the bathroom door, I put all that stuff about Akima and Miss Saunders and the office out of my head. Hanging out in the bathroom is party time, Char likes to say. So I go in there ready to have a good time. I scoop myself up on the sink and kick off my shoes. Char gets up in the mirror and puts on another coat of mascara. She and the twins, Raisa and Raina, laugh. They're talking about Worm and some other boys I don't care nothing about. I smile and act like I'm listening. Next thing I know, I'm reading one of Akilma's letters. Char asks what I'm up to. I tell her nothing. She grabs my stuff so hard my books fall on the floor.
Malika's tripping on that slave stuff again,
Char says, taking out her cigarette lighter and setting one of my pages on fire. I can feel my ears burning hot with anger. I blow out the burning papers.
Why does Malika got to be with us anyhow?
Raina asks, putting lipstick on for the third time.
Malika is corny and ugly.
Raisa sticks her face in the mirror right alongside her sister's. A matching set.
It used to be fun watching Malika half kill herself learning to smoke,
Raina says, cutting her eyes at me.
But Malika's just a pain now, says Raisa.
Raisa and Raina pull back from the mirror at the same time. They both puff up their hair and scratch the same side of their necks at once. Char says the only reason she lets me hang with her in the first place is to get her grades up.
It seems like it's been forever and they ain't up yet, Raina says.
Char shakes her head and smiles.
You're right, Raina. I'm thinking about letting her go anyhow.
Char is talking like I ain't even here.
Only I can't cut her loose yet. We got that big book report due in social studies. After that, you're a history girl.
Now Char is looking my way. Raina's still on my case. Malika, ever since you got that new hairdo, you think you're something. Don't you, Miss Baldy? She says, laughing. I don't laugh. I look at her like she's getting on my last nerve. Next thing I know, cigarette smoke is everywhere, and Raisa is showing us how to do some new dance. Char asks me to hold her cigarette. She digs in her purse and takes out a marker. She writes her name in big black letters on the wall near the sink. Charlize Jones. All of a sudden, Miss Saunders comes busting into the bathroom like she's a cop. All right, she says. Dag, Raisa says. Why you always gotta be ruining stuff, Miss Saunders? Charlize is pissed. This is the third time Miss Saunders has busted her in the bathroom this month. Miss Saunders comes over to me and yanks a cigarette out of my hand. I'm surprised to see you here, Malika, she says, flushing the cigarette down the toilet. Then she rubs her hands on her slacks. Malika ain't no goody-two-shoes like you're trying to make her out to be, Miss Saunders, Char says, putting her arm around my shoulder. Her and me done all kinds of things together. Save it, Char, Miss Saunders